Chapter 12. The high noonday sun shimmered brightly off the sapphire waters of the Bohol Sea, forcing Raoul Biazon to squint as he gazed towards the large research vessel moored in the distance. For a moment, the Philippine government biologist thought the sun's rays were playing a trick on his eyes. No respectable scientific research ship could possibly be emblazoned in such a lively hue. But as the small, weather-beaten launch in which he rode drew closer, he saw that there was nothing wrong with his vision. The ship was, in fact, painted a glistening turquoise blue from stem to stern, which made the vessel appear as if it belonged under the sea rather than bobbing atop it. Leave it to the Americans, Biazon thought, to escape the ordinary. The launch pilot guided the worn wooden boat alongside a stepladder suspended over the side of the ship, and Biazon wasted no time in leaping aboard. Speaking briefly to the pilot in Tagalog, he turned and scampered up the ladder and sprang onto the deck, nearly colliding with a tall, brawny man who stood at the rail. With thinning blonde hair and sturdy build, there was a Viking-like air about the man who was dressed in an immaculate white warm-weather captain's uniform. Dr. Biazon, welcome aboard the Mariana Explorer. I'm Captain Bill Stenseth. The man smiled warmly through gray eyes. Thank you for receiving me on such short notice, Captain, Biazon replied, regaining his stance and composure. When a local fisherman informed me that a Numa research vessel was seen in the region, I thought you might be able to offer some assistance. Let's head to the bridge and out of the heat, Stenseth directed, and you can fill us in on the environmental calamity you mentioned over the radio. I hope that I am not interfering with your research work, Biazon said as the two men climbed a flight of stairs. Not at all. We've just completed a seismic mapping project off Mindanao and are taking a break to test some equipment before heading up to Manila. Besides, Stenseth said with a grin, when my boss says stop the boat, I stop the boat. Your boss? Biazon inquired with a confused look. Yes, Stenseth replied as they reached the bridge wing and he pulled open the side door. He's traveling on board with us. Biazon stepped through the door and into the bridge, shivering involuntarily as a blast of refrigerated air struck his perspiration-soaked body. At the rear of the bridge, he noticed a tall, distinguished-looking man in shorts and a polo shirt bent over a chart table studying a map. Dr. Biazon, may I present the director of NUMA, Dirk Pitt, Stenseth introduced. Dirk, this is Dr. Raoul Biazon, hazardous wastes manager with the Philippines Environmental Management Bureau. Biazon was shocked to find the head of a large government agency working at sea so far from Washington. But one look at Pitt and Biazon knew he wasn't the typical government administrator. Standing nearly a foot taller than his own 5'4" frame, the NUMA chief carried a tan, lean, and muscular body which showed few indications of having spent much time behind a desk. Though Biazon wouldn't know, the senior Pitt was nearly the spitting image of his son, who carried the same name. The face was weathered, and the ebony hair showed tinges of gray at the temples, but the opaline green eyes sparkled with life. They were eyes that had absorbed much in their day, Biazon gauged, reflecting an assorted mix of intelligence, mirth, and tenacity. Welcome aboard, Pitt greeted warmly, shaking Biazon's hand with a firm grip. My underwater technology director, Al Giordino, he added, jabbing a thumb over his shoulder towards the far corner of the wheelhouse. Curled up asleep on a bench seat was a short, thick man with dark, curly hair. A light snore drifted from the man's lips with each breath of air that exhaled from his barrel-shaped chest. His powerful build reminded Biazon of a rhinoceros. Al, come join the party, Pitt yelled across the bridge. Giordino pried his eyes open, then popped instantly awake. He quickly stood and joined the other men at the table, showing no signs of slumber. As I told the captain, I appreciate your offer of assistance, Biazon said. The Philippine government has always been supportive of our research work in your country's waters, Pitt replied. When we received your radio call to help identify a toxic marine affliction, we were glad to help. Perhaps you can tell us a little more about the specifics of the outbreak. A few weeks ago, our office was contacted by a resort hotel on Panglao Island. The hotel's management was upset because a large quantity of dead fish were washing up on the guest beach. I could see where that would tend to dampen the holidaymakers' spirits, Giordino grinned. Indeed, Biazon replied sternly. We began monitoring the shoreline and have witnessed the fish kill growing at an alarming rate. Dead marine life is washing ashore along a 10-kilometer stretch of beach now and growing day by day. The resort owners are all up in arms, and we, of course, are concerned about potential damage to the coral reef.
Have you been able to diagnose what is killing the fish? Stenseth asked.
Not yet. Toxic poisoning is all we can infer. We have sent samples to our departmental lab in Cebu for analysis, but are still awaiting the results.
The look on Biazon's face revealed his dissatisfaction with the snail-paced response from the agency lab.
Any speculation as to the source? Pitt asked.
Biazon shook his head.
We initially suspected industrial pollutants, which regrettably are an all-too-common source of environmental damage in my country. But my field team and I have scoured the impacted coastal region and failed to locate any heavy industrial businesses operating in the area. We also examined the coastline for obvious spillways or illegal dump sites, but came up empty. It is my belief that the source of the kill originates at sea.
Perhaps a red tide? Giordino said.
We do experience toxic phytoplankton outbreaks in the Philippines, Biazon said, though they are typically seen during the warmer late summer months.
It might also be some covert offshore industrial dumping, Pitt replied.
Where exactly is the impacted area, Dr. Biazon?
Biazon glanced at the map, which showed Mindanao and the southern Philippine island groupings.
Off the province of Bohol, he said, pointing to a large, round island north of Mindanao. Panglao is a small resort island located here, adjacent to the southwest coast. It's about 50 kilometers from our present position.
I can have us there in under 2 hours, Stenseth said, eyeing the distance.
Pitt nodded towards the map.
We've got a ship full of scientists who can help find the answers.
Bill, lay a course into Panglao Island and we'll take a look.
Thank you, a visibly relieved Biazon said.
Doctor, perhaps you'd like a tour of the ship while we get underway, Pitt offered.
I'd like that very much.
Al, you care to join us?
Giordino looked at his watch pensively.
No, thanks. 2 hours will be just enough time for me to finish my project, he replied, easing himself back down on the bench seat and drifting rapidly back to sleep.
The Mariana Explorer cruised easily through a flat sea and arrived at Panglao Island in just over 90 minutes. Pitt studied an electronic navigational map of the area that was displayed on a color monitor as Biazon denoted a rectangular area where the fish kill was occurring.
Bill, the current runs east to west through here, which would suggest that the hot zone is located at the eastern end of Dr. Biazon's box. Why don't we start to the west and work our way east into the current, taking water samples at quarter-mile increments?
Stenseth nodded.
I'll run a zigzag course to see if we can gauge how far from shore the toxin is concentrated.
And let's deploy the side-scan sonar. Might as well see if there's any obvious man-made objects involved.
Dr. Biazon watched with interest as a towed sonar fish was deployed off the stern. Then the Mariana Explorer began following a dot-to-dot path laid out on the navigation screen. At periodic intervals, a team of marine biologists collected seawater samples from varying depths. As the ship moved to the next position, the collected samples were sent down to the shipboard laboratory for immediate analysis. On the bridge, Giordino tracked the signals from the side-scan sonar. The electronic image of the shallow seafloor revealed an interweaving mix of flat sand bottom and craggy coral mounts as the ship sailed over the fringes of a coral reef. In a short time, his trained eyes had already discerned a ship's anchor and an outboard motor lying beneath the well-traveled waters. As the monitor revealed each object, Giordino reached over and punched a mark button on the console, which flagged the location for later assessment.
Pitt and Biazon stood nearby, admiring the tropical beaches of Panglao Island less than a half mile away. Pitt glanced down at the water alongside the ship, where he spotted a sea turtle and scores of dead fish floating belly up.
We've entered the toxic zone, Pitt said. We should know the results shortly.
As the research vessel plowed west, the concentration of dead fish in the water increased, then gradually fell away until the blue sea around them grew empty again.
We're a half mile beyond Dr. Biazon's grid, Stenseth reported. Judging by the water, it looks like we're well clear of the toxic zone.
Agreed, Pitt replied.
Let's stand by here until we see what kind of results the lab has found.
As the ship ground to a halt and the sonar towfish was retrieved, Pitt led Biazon down a level into a teak-paneled conference room, followed by Giordino and Stenseth.
Biazon studied the portraits of several famous underwater explorers which lined one wall, recognizing the images of William Beebe, Sylvia Earle, and Don Walsh. As they were seated, a pair of marine biologists, clad in the requisite white lab coats, entered the conference room. A short, attractive female, her brunette hair tied back in a ponytail, walked to a suspended viewing screen at the front of the room, while her male assistant began typing commands into the computer-driven projection system.
We have completed an assessment of 44 discrete water samples collected, which were analyzed using molecular separation of existing toxic molecules, she said in a clear voice. As she spoke, an image appeared on the screen behind her, similar to the navigation screen Biazon had noticed the ship tracking to earlier. A zigzag line punctuated by 44 large dots ran parallel to an outline of the Panglao Island shoreline. Each dot was color-coded, though Biazon noted that most of them glowed green. The samples were measured for toxic content in parts per billion, with positive results occurring in 15 of the samples, the biologist stated, pointing to a row of yellow dots. As you can see from the chart, the concentration increases as the samples moved east, with the highest reading registered here, she said, tracing past a few orange-colored dots to a lone red dot near the top of the map.
So the source is from an isolated location, Pitt said.
The samples tested negative beyond the red point, indicating that it is likely of a concentrated origin spreading east with the current.
That would seem to dispel the red tide theory.
Al, do the results mesh with anything we picked up on the sonar?
Giordino walked over to the console and leaned over the operator's shoulder, typing in a quick series of commands. A dozen X's suddenly appeared on the projection screen, overlaid at random points along the zigzag tracking line. Each X was lettered, beginning with A at the bottom, proceeding to L near the top.
Al's Dirty Dozen hit list, he smiled, retaking his seat. We ran over 12 objects that appeared man-made, mostly chunks of pipe, rusty anchors, and the like. Three items appeared that could be suspected culprits, he said, eyeing a sheet of handwritten notes. Mark C was a trio of 55-gallon drums lying in the sand. Every eye in the room jumped to the X marked C on the overhead. The water samples on either side of the mark were all illuminated with green dots, which signified a negative test result.
No toxins registered in the vicinity, Pitt said. Next.
Mark F looks to be a wooden sailboat, perhaps a local fishing boat. She's sitting upright on the bottom with her mast still standing.
This X was located adjacent to the first yellow dot.
Pitt commented that it was still down current of the toxic readings.
Strike two, but you're getting warmer.
My last mark is a little odd, as the image was just at the range of the sonar, Giordino said, pausing with uncertainty.
Well, what did it look like? Stenseth asked.
A ship's propeller. Looked like it was protruding from the reef. I couldn't make out any sign of the ship that went with it, though. Might just be a lone propeller that got bashed off against the reef. I tagged it at mark K.
Every voice in the room fell silent as their eyes found the X marked K on the overhead screen. It was positioned right above the red dot.
It would appear there's something more to it than just a propeller, Pitt said finally.
Leaking fuel from a submerged ship? Or perhaps its cargo?
We did not detect abnormally high readings of petroleum compounds in the water samples, the NUMA biologist stated.
You never did tell us what you found, Giordino said, raising a dark eyebrow at the biologist.
Yes, you said you did identify toxins in the water, didn't you? Biazon asked anxiously. What was it that you found?
Something I've never encountered in salt water before, she replied, shaking her head slowly.
Arsenic.